Welcome to a discussion of radical fundamental principles of freedom, rational self-interest, laissez-faire capitalism, and individual rights. The Yaron Brooks Show starts now.
Hi, everybody. It's Yaron Brooks, and we're in the Blaze Radio Network. I assume everybody's following what is happening in Houston. It's pretty devastating and pretty sad to see kind of the devastation that's occurring over there and the extent of the damage and loss of life and property. I mean, we probably won't know how bad all of this is for another, I don't know, a few weeks. It's really going to be hard to tell. I mean, it's the magnitude of what is going on is pretty scary. So we're going to talk a little bit about hurricanes, about ability to sustain hurricanes. I want to talk about the flood insurance, the government flood insurance program, which is substantial and problematic on many different fronts, and so we're gonna talk about flood insurance, the government provided flood insurance, and that how is that, and how that's in many regards, in many respects, creating a much worse situation out there, and then we'll see where that takes us. But first, our thoughts with the people in Houston and with all those people who are in flooded areas and who've evacuated and are going to be returning to their homes at some point here. I hope the damage and the loss of life is a lot less than what it appears to be right now. So we will see. It looks pretty nasty and it looks pretty bad based on all the reports. But, you know, the reports also have a tendency to exaggerate things. Ultimately, what sells the news is tragedy and catastrophe. So there is an element of exaggeration. But, you know, we have to remember Katrina and remember the damage and how long it took to figure out how bad things really were during Katrina. So stay tuned. We will see how devastating this flood really is. Just to put it somewhat in, in perspective, probably the worst hurricane to ever hit the United States, hit in a very close area to where this hurricane hit. It was in Galveston, Texas, in 1900, so 117 years ago, almost to the date. It was in early September, so about a week off. It hit Galveston, and that hurricane caused the deaths of over 10, somewhere between 8,000 to 10,000 people. So somewhere between 8,000 to 10,000 people were died as a consequence of that hurricane. Galveston was utterly destroyed, devastated. This was a booming town. It was a boom town because it had a port. Texas, the oil industry and everything else, where Texas generally was booming, and Galveston was enjoying that. Now, Galveston was built on ground on kind of an island that is barely above sea level. I think the numbers are it's at like 8.7 feet above sea level was the highest point in Galveston, and the surge from the hurricane was higher than that, and just basically completely devastated the town. 10,000 people died in Galveston as a result of that hurricane. It's interesting kind of to understand why that is, why the devastation was so significant for the Galveston hurricane, and indeed why devastation for future hurricanes is likely, and this hurricane is likely to be significantly less. At least that's what we hope. We hope we don't get anywhere close to 10,000 people dying. And no hurricane has since. I think Katrina, which in modern times is the worst hurricane we've ever had in terms of fatalities, is 1,800 people lost their lives in Katrina. So nothing has really come close to the Galveston devastation. And it is kind of interesting to speculate as to why, and you know, there's a number of reasons for that. One is that the location, you know, it was on an island, it was above sea level, there wasn't planning, but also they only had one day of warning. They only have one day of warning before the hurricane actually hit Galveston. So it was devastating. It was somewhat of a surprise. People didn't have time to prepare for it. I mean, even this hurricane that just hit is a hurricane that we didn't get as much time as we usually get because it kind of developed very, very quickly off the shore. But there was still time to evacuate some of the islands off the shore of Texas. There was time to evacuate some of the low-lying areas in Texas that were going to get hit the hardest. And as a consequence, you know, it's likely that some lives were saved as a consequence of all that. So it's partially the fact that we didn't have any kind of warning systems back then. There was the weather. There was no weather channel. There were no hurricane, you know, airplanes flying through hurricanes. There was no satellite imagery of storms developing. We have so much notice. Technology has made the world so much safer for human beings. And of course, this is a point Alex Epstein makes from the Center for Industrial Progress, who comments a lot on these kind of natural disasters, particularly weather-related natural disasters, and our ability and our readiness to deal with those kind of natural disasters. And the fact is, we have this amazing technology that allows us to see what's coming, to prepare for what's coming, and to evacuate areas that are going to be particularly hard hit. Now, Houston was not evacuated, partially because the idea was that having, how many people live in those counties? I think it's 6.5 million people live in Houston and the adjacent counties. And the idea was to have 6.5 million people on the road as the hurricane hit. Because this hurricane developed so quickly, it developed in the Gulf of Mexico, it wasn't really a hurricane that you could see coming from a distance. And having all those people, at least this is the reason that state of Texas gives, all those people on the road would have been a complete and utter disaster in terms of lives, in terms of placing people at risk. So most people stayed, and you know, hopefully that turned out to be the right call, and people staying is not gonna endanger their lives and cause too much devastation. So even Galveston, if you go back to the history, even Galveston was the city of Galveston was raised 17 feet. The whole island, in a sense, was raised 17 feet. And they built a seawall to protect from future surges. So even in Galveston, there was an actual response to the hurricane, a technological response, a response of man changing his environment, changing the islands so that when a future hurricane came, it would be a lot less devastating to the people there. So human beings, we're smart. We have brains. We can change the world around us. We can adapt. We can make the world safer for us so that future hurricanes are less damaging. So one aspect of this is technology, is the ability to forecast, is the ability to see it coming. In Galveston, they had one day notice. It's also knowledge now of history, which areas are more prone to hurricanes and where is it likely to hit in devastating fashion. And then our ability to kind of change our environment to make our environment safer for us. And we'll talk more about that. We're going to talk more about that after the break. And, you know, if you're interested in joining the conversation, or if you live in Texas and want to share some experiences about what's going on right now, 1-888-900-3393. We're talking Hurricane Harvey, Texas, the response, FEMA, flood insurance. We'll get into all of that as the hour progresses. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show on the Blaze Radio Network. We'll be back. Right.
Best-selling author, prolific media contributor, PhD in finance. This is the Yaron Brooks Show, the Blaze Radio Network. Listening to the Yaron Brooks Show.
All right, this is Yaron Brooks, and we're talking about this devastating hurricane in Texas. So first, our thoughts are with all the people suffering from this unbelievable rain that's coming down, and the winds have already devastated much of coastal Texas. Now it's rain and ultimately flooding that is causing, causing probably loss of life, unfortunately. A lot of property destruction, a lot of devastation. And really, it's going to be a test of Houston's infrastructure. And probably more than anything else, think about all the refineries. Think about all the industry. Houston is a very industrial city. And it's going to be interesting to see the massive oil storage facilities there. And there's been, in the past, there's been a lot of talk about what happens when there's a massive flood. What happens to those facilities? Is that going to cause oil to spill over? Is there going to be a massive, we'll call it environmental, disaster here in terms of oil spillage or any kind of chemical spillage, massive chemical plants? I don't know if you guys have been to Houston, but Houston is this massive industrial city. You know, the other thing about Houston that is worth pointing out is Houston is a city that doesn't really have any zoning. So you could have industry and residential and commercial and, high rises and a hodgepodge of different places around the city. So it's a very interesting place and should be very interesting to watch. Interesting and potentially sad to watch. How it all plays out. But let's hope that those industries have really secured all their facilities, that those industries secured all those the chemicals and everything else, because you could add on to the flooding, the additional disaster of all those spillages would be quite horrific. If you're in Texas or if you want to discuss anything, any of this, feel free to call in 888-900-3393, 888-900-3393. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show. And we started talking about the fact that in Galveston, in 1900, 10,000 people died when that hurricane hits, and how Galveston was completely unprepared, that technology at the time was such that when we were far more exposed to the weather than we are today. So even though today there is far more population density, so there are far more people who are going to be affected by Hurricane Harvey than were affected by the hurricane in Galveston. Today, because of better forecasting, but primarily because of our ability to construct defenses against these hurricanes, we are likely to see far fewer casualties and probably more property damage, but also not the level. I mean, Galveston was basically flattened. Nothing survived. You're probably not going to see that level of devastation. We today have the technology to build better. We today have the technology, to protect ourselves. We have the technology to build things that are resistant to 130 mile an hour wind, although there were some pictures of some buildings that that came down from those winds that that you know didn't were not built well enough or you know the winds were unexpected or the direction of the winds was unexpected and everything. One of the things that so you've got amazing amazing technology today at place, both to predict, forecast, warn. You can a lot of people evacuated, particularly the most dangerous places. People evacuated those places. So you're not going to see that again in Hurricane in the Galveston Hurricane. They had one day to prepare. Of course, our technology allows us to build these safe and sound places. And this is why, while weather is potentially dangerous, right? Extreme weather situations where you have massive quantities of rain or you have these devastating winds or you have the sea levels rising because of some activity of weather. We, as human beings, are actually quite able to protect ourselves against this and quite able to build buildings that protect ourselves, build infrastructure that is protected. I suspect that if more of our infrastructure was private, this would be done even better, and we'll get to flood insurance in a little bit. We're quite able to cope with these natural disasters. And natural disasters are natural disasters. They're disasters called by nature. I mean, for all of you out there who love Mother Earth likes to beat up on her kids once in a while. There is no Mother Earth, and there are no kids to Mother Earth, but you get the reference. All right, if you want to call in, 888-900-3393, 888-900-3393. So major hurricane, major flooding. I did see some news coverage from Houston just this morning. The flooding's pretty devastating, but what was interesting was lights were on. It looks like some of the power utilities are hanging on and doing okay. Cell coverage was pretty strong. That is, people were able to communicate. It turns out Twitter is one of the main ways in which people are letting people know and people are sending out about distress and about needing help. So Twitter, private enterprise, the whole internet infrastructure, the cell phone towers, the cell phone companies are doing relatively well. So that's good news. Thank God the government is not doesn't own those cell towers and doesn't actually run our cellular infrastructure and our internet infrastructure. But let's hope that people stay safe and that there are enough emergency personnel there to be able to help people who are in trouble. It sounds like Texas is really mobilized. They've got 2,000 Texas National Guards. You've got Coast Guard helicopters everywhere. But this is going to take days because, flooding is often because of rain somewhere else. It's not even because of rain where you are. So rain, in the hill country in Texas flows downstream towards the Gulf and flows through Houston and some of those coastal communities. So they're going to get pounded over the next few years with potentially more flooding and repeated flooding and devastating floods. So we'll just have to see. It's very hard to tell news reporting at these disasters. Sometimes they seem to underreport how bad things are. I think that happened with Katrina. It took us days to really realize how devastating Katrina was. And sometimes they overreport because tragedy and disaster sell and they overdo it, and the 24/7 news coverage tends to kind of overdo this and make us more worried than we should be. But this looks like a very serious event, and therefore thinking about the people who are struggling there and hoping they do well and that they find a way out of this. All right, we have got, when we come back, we're going to talk about flood insurance, federal flood insurance, and we'll be back right after these messages.
You're on Brooke on the Blaze Radio Network.
talking today about the this massive hurricane that hit Texas, the flooding. And I want to get into a discussion of flood insurance and how that distorts everything out there, and FEMA and everything else. We talked about how even with the fact that there's so much population concentrated in a place like Houston, we're still unlikely to see the kind of devastation that we saw in 1900 because of the kind of technology we have. And this goes to this question of kind of global warming, climate change, that even if, you know, and everybody's going to blame the storm on climate change, even though there's zero evidence of that fact. But even if there was, even if it's true that carbon fuels are causing climate change and climate change is going to cause more hurricanes like this, it's also true, and this is much more important, that those fossil fuels are making it possible to protect us from these kind of devastating natural disasters. That is, it's the fossil fuels that make it possible for us to put satellites into space. It's the fossil fuels that make it possible for us to build better, more resilient buildings. It's the fossil fuel that makes it possible to evacuate people. It's the fossil fuels that are running those helicopters looking that the Coastal Guard is using to try to evacuate people. It is fossil fuels everywhere in our lives that makes it possible for us to bear the brunt of what nature dishes out so much better than we ever have as human beings in the past. And it's fossil fuels that are ultimately the reason why there will be relatively fewer, still there will be some casualties, but relatively few casualties as compared to, let's say, the hurricane of 1900 that just flattened Galveston and completely destroyed it. So even if you could make the connection to climate change, my response is, who cares? We're ready and equipped. And if anything, if we could just get our economy to be more privatized, as we'll talk about, it would respond even better to these kind of disasters. The number of casualties from hurricanes and other natural disasters would actually decline substantially as a consequence. Now, these are all points, by the way, made by brilliantly by Alex Epstein in his book, The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. I highly recommend. I had Alex on the show last week when I was filling in for Mike Opelka, and he makes this point brilliantly in the book. So I strongly recommend that you buy The Moral Case for Fossil Fuel. All right, we're going to take a quick call. Richard from Miami is calling. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Aaron. Actually, it sounds like you answered most of my question, because I woke up to reports this morning that the amount of rainfall in this situation is record levels over 500 years.
Yeah.
I don't know how they know what happened 500 years ago.
Well, don't you know that
the
American Indians kept detailed records of rainfall? Oh, no. I mean, the Spanish might have. In some areas, the Spanish might have. So there might be actual records of rainfall in some places. But yeah, I mean, that sounds a little ridiculous, and it is a little ridiculous. But so what is my argument? I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is the largest rainfall in 500 years in that particular part of the world. I think more rain than that drops in what's that one mountain in Maui in Hawaii, the wettest place on the planet or something like that. I mean, it doesn't matter, right? And even if it is the worst, you can't extrapolate from that impact of climate change. You can't extrapolate almost anything from that. 500 years is a nanosecond from the perspective of the history of the planet, of planet Earth. So what about 16,000 years ago? Maybe more rain dropped back then. I'm not an expert on the geological history of the Earth, but wasn't Texas like underwater at some point? To tell us that something is 500 years or once in a 500 years occurrence, okay. Stuff happens once every 500 years. Bad stuff happens once every 5 years. But to extrapolate from that to climate change or to man-made anything is just absurd and shows how little how little people think in terms of history. 500 years sounds like a long time. But when you take into account the, you know, how long the earth has been here, it's nothing. And how long even people have lived in North America. People have lived in North America what? And here I'm speculating a little bit because I don't know the exact number. 20,000 years? I think they crossed over the Bering Straits somewhere around 20,000, maybe 15,000 years ago. What's 500 relative to 20,000? So it's the whole thing is meaningless to say. I mean, it's interesting. Wow, it's a lot of rain. I mean, that's what it tells you, right? Because I've been in rainstorms in Texas, and when it rains in Texas, it rains in Texas. I tell people who, you know, sometimes it rains in California, not very often, but sometimes. And I tell people, man, it never really rains in California. It drizzles. You get a little wetness in the air. But when it rains in like the Midwest or in Texas or in it, I mean, man, what was the term? It raining cats and dogs. I mean, it really does. It, you know, the drops are the size of little cats and dogs. Anyway, it really, so it's interesting that it's in spite of how much it sometimes rains in Texas, this is the most in 500 years. And it's scary for the people living there because that means that floodwaters could be the highest they've ever been. It could mean a lot of bad stuff. But it you know, they're trying to connect this to, they're trying to inflict guilt. They're trying to cause you to feel, ooh, the worst in 500 years, we must have caused it. No, there's no way to extrapolate between those two. All right, Richard, do you have any other questions?
Thank you.
Sure.
Oh, thank you. That was great.
Sure. All right. We're going to hold off on Skyla and on Henry, who are both calling in until after the break. We've got a break in by about a minute and a half, and then I'll take you both after that. So, yeah, I mean, this idea that every time something bad happens, it's our fault. It's so original sin kind of thing. It's so you got to feel guilty. And as a human being, anything bad that happens out there in the world must be your fault, must be our fault. It comes from that, you know, requirement to feel guilty about our lives that I guess we get from Christianity, maybe from other places as well. But it's so much, unfortunately, a part of our lives, you know, always it's our fault. No, Mother Nature, not a mother, but nature, you know, bad stuff happens. I mean, there's going to be a big earthquake in California, and it won't be anybody's fault. Although you can start feeling guilty now if you really want to. And I'm sure, I've even seen stories where climate change somehow causes earthquakes. And if it's not climate change, my guess it's going to be fracking. Fracking is going to cause the next big earthquake in California. Even though we've always known there's going to be a next big earthquake in California. We just do. It's just nature, right? There's going to be a massive hurricane that hits Texas, or hits Louisiana, hits Florida. Hey, Florida, you haven't had a real hurricane hit you in a long, long time. You do. Right now, statistics don't quite function that way. But yeah, at some point, they're going to get the earthquake. But we always look to blame human beings. I mean, all right, when I come back, I am going to blame some human beings. I'm going to blame not for the hurricane, but for the response to the hurricane and why we're probably going to see, you know, a mess afterwards. Why part of the disaster would have been averted if not for government action. So the whole structure of incentives around living in places that are susceptible to these kind of natural disasters is all messed up. All right, you're listening to Yaron Brook Show on the Blaze Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Israeli military veteran and radical for capitalism. It's the Yaron Brook Show on the Blaze Radio Network. You're on.
All right, we're talking about Hurricane Harvey and the devastation it's causing in Houston and the kind of response we should have. And we're going to get into discussion of flood insurance and FEMA. But let me quickly take Henry's call from Virginia. Hi, Henry. You're on the Yaron Brook Show.
Doing today. Oh, there we go. Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Excellent. I'm doing pretty well. So I was on the new listener, and I was wondering if you could quickly speak to the response and whether or not, you know, a response would fit into the objectivist ethic kind of with respect to humanitarian action. Because I've been reading actually a quite timely book called Doing Bad by Doing Good by Christopher Coyne, where he talks about how humanitarian action tends to fail, particularly state-led.
Yes.
Action. And I was wondering, but more specifically, if you could kind of speak to the kind of the philosophical or ethical, I guess, response to this sort of event, which you can't know ex ante.
No, that's a great question. So, look, these are human beings that are suffering. We are, as life-loving human beings, objectivists, I think extraordinarily benevolent. And I feel legitimately, rationally sorry for the people whose lives are being, in some cases, destroyed, in some cases, devastated by what is happening, by the weather. And it's no fault of their own, assuming that, right? I mean, some of them could have protected themselves better, but to some extent, it's no fault of their own. And I'm quite happy to help in situations like this, to write a check to the Red Cross or to something like that, if not for, and I have to add this, the fact that I'm already writing a damn big check through my taxes that go to the federal government and the state government that go to all this stuff, and that the government is already taking money from me, supposedly, to do exactly this. So I have to say that my benevolence is, or my willingness to contribute to help people who, for no fault of their own, are suffering right now, is mitigated by the fact that I feel like I gave at the office, that they're already taking. They put a gun to my head and they've taken my money and using it for these services. So if we lived in a truly free market, and I want to get to this also when we talk about FEMA and we talk about flood insurance. If we lived in a truly free market, then I think we would all be incredibly generous, because we would sympathize with other human beings who, for no fault of their own, are now, you know, in trouble and in need. I don't think it's a moral claim against us. I don't think it's morally required to do so. I don't think if you don't give, you're inherently a bad person. But I also think that it's completely consistent with objectivism to, you know, value human life and to say, what's happened to these people is sad, and I'd like to help them because I'm a human being and they're a human being. And you know what? Those people in Texas are damn productive, and I benefit from them being able to produce and to create and to build. My life is better off for the fact that they go and work in their refineries and their industries, and they work at the port there, and that to some extent they are contributing to my well-being, and therefore I am willing to help them out in a case of disaster. And this goes back historically to kind of how America's always been. I mean, if the neighbor's house was burned down by a fire, you know, the neighbors would all get together and go out and build a new house for them and help them build a new house. And I think that's what you benevolently do to your neighbors. It's not about if my house burns down, then I expect my neighbors to come to me. Then you're creating this atmosphere of people owing each other things, and the benevolence goes out the window. No, it's an act of benevolence. It's an act of respect for other human beings, particularly if they're your neighbors, human beings hopefully you like, human beings who are productive, human beings who contribute to your life in some way. And I think in a world in which we live in today, people who live in other places in America who are working for a living contribute to my life, and I'm willing to help them. If they really suffer from, you know, no fault of their own. And but again, I think that's mitigated by the fact that the federal government and the state government forces me already to participate. So I don't do charity.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I give so much already.
But building kind of off of that point, that makes it a lot of sense, and that's a great answer. Thank you. But kind of building off of that, would it be, do you think, too harsh to say that, so one of the points of the book that I've read is that humanitarian action on a state level tends to be miserable and fail without a doubt on yes. a number of different levels. And I was, do you think that's simply because of the philosophy behind that? Would it be fair to say that it's ineffective because it's impractical and, you know, the good is the practical?
Yeah, I mean, it's impractical because it's centrally planned. It's planned from afar. It's impractical because the bureaucrats have all the wrong incentives. And they don't exactly know necessarily what they're doing. It's impossible because they don't have the infrastructure to deliver. So we're going to talk to Skylar after the next break. But, you know, like after Katrina, the first people to provide goods in the New Orleans area was Walmart, because Walmart knows logistics. They know infrastructure. They know how to do this. FEMA just doesn't have that skill set, and it can have that skill set because it's a government entity that is involved in force, not in providing goods and services. All right, we have to take a break here. We've got a hard break coming up. Skylar, hang on. We're going to come to you after the break. We're going to talk FEMA, flood insurance, and anything else you want to talk about related to this devastating hurricane. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show. We're here every Sunday between 11 and 1 Pacific time. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Yaron Brooks Show on the Blaze Radio Network.